It's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank CPR for holding this event. I also want to thank them for helping to ensure that I and several other economists will be fully employed for the next couple of decades. I'm a supporter of benefit cost analysis. And the short reason is that I really don't see any obvious alternative, notwithstanding the good efforts of CPR and other folks who have written in this area. That doesn't mean that people like Ken Arrow or myself or folks who endorse this approach believe that you can get an answer about net benefits to three significant digits. It does mean that for decisions involving significant amounts of resources, say hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, that the government engages in routinely, we think that this instrument should be used to inform the decision-making process. It doesn't mean that we think it's the only instrument that should be used to inform the decision-making process. And several people on this panel have suggested very useful ways of either augmenting the instrument or adding additional insights. Let me turn my attention to two problems. One which is a positive statement, so you can agree or disagree with it, and the second which is a normative statement. I want to make the point that I believe cost-benefit analysis can be done a lot better than it's currently done, and I want to, the second point I want to make is one that might upset you, and that's that we don't pay enough attention to cost-benefit analysis in a lot of areas involving the environment. How do I do this here? I don't have time to go through this graph in detail, but it reflects an analysis of about 75 RIAs, or regulatory impact assessments, in the environmental area that EPA reviewed during various administrations. And the takeaway from this graph, I don't know if you can read it, is basically that only a small fraction of the time did the agency actually calculate things like net benefits and cost effectiveness. Also not shown on this graph, they frequently, EPA and other agencies, don't consider alternatives, notwithstanding the requirement in the executive order. This is a similar story for Europe, but the blue bars, which reflect the U.S., are higher than the green bars, which reflected Europe a few years ago. And again, I don't want to go into this in detail. So that's my, basically there's a whole line of research, some of which has been done by CPR, which suggests there are real problems in the way this instrument is implemented within the context of the executive order, and I agree with that. I just want to offer a graph from a paper that Caroline Seacott and I did on ethanol and the renewable fuel standard. And the only takeaway here, and again because of time, I can't explain it, is that the government did a partial analysis of ethanol, corn-based ethanol, but didn't bother in that analysis to even tote up the benefits and costs. And when you do, under almost any plausible scenario, we find that the costs exceed the benefits. So my bottom line is that, first, there's a lot of room for improvement in how benefit-cost analysis is actually implemented. And I think ethanol is one example, but you could pick numerous examples where economists have useful things to say about what the government does. One that came up very recently is when President Obama announced that we were going to have CAFE standards to the tune of about 35 miles per gallon in, I think, the year 2016. Great idea, but there's a whole lot of economic analysis that suggests more efficient ways of addressing this problem, and I think those kinds of ideas should be used not only to introduce alternatives, but to impose greater accountability and transparency on the regulatory process. Thank you.